Welcome to another episode of Working with Purpose, a show dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the body of Christ. We're glad you're here. And today we have a new series of topics we've been doing this year. It's called Questions in Business and Leadership. This series is going to continue on the path to advance the image of leadership based upon the metaphor of an agile human body instead of that of a rigid machine. I want to let you know you can join this conversation online anytime at davidstarkcollective.com or find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. You can also listen to our podcasts and leave us a review on iTunes. And so, Justin, we're here today and we're asking this question. And the question really is, you know, what direction are you and your company going? And of course, that's a constant question for people. But I've spent a lot of time over the years helping individuals and helping organizations really try to figure that out. And almost all of us have been inspired by people who've answered that question well. In other words, there's been times where their vision or their purpose has motivated us and it's captured us up. Of course, this will date me a little bit, but for the baby boomers, the I Have a Dream speech, which I just read the other day, was pretty much extemporaneous for Dr. King. He had other notes, but he went with it. You know, and of course, it motivated an entire generation to begin to tackle, which we're nowhere close to finishing, the whole sense of racial justice in America and of watching this. It's just captured people, still captures people when they listen to it, right? Or on the other extreme, I remember one of the first times I went to Willow Creek Community Church in Chicago. Bill Hybels has been the leader for a long time. And I remember when he made this one line, he says, the local church is the hope of the world. And it captured so many leaders that, yeah, it really is. It upped everybody's game. It got everybody focused on that direction, which was at his heart. So it's very inspiring and energizing to have that direction. Although, in your reflective moments, we struggle exactly how to get that for ourselves or for our organization. And I think we should take some time and try to talk about that today, help clarify what that means.
Yes, please. I'm really glad that we're tackling this question because I just need an answer.
Okay.
But I think everyone does. We all struggle with this. And this is part of, you know, what comes in the box with humanity.
It is, right. You know, and I see it going on every day. And it's one of the biggest things that I really enjoy doing with organizations and with people is trying to get at that. Maybe not an answer, but at least a direction
in terms of
where you're going.
So we'll talk about that. And you know, vision, when you talk about vision, you know, it's related to a lot of other words that we've been talking about too, like purpose. And you mentioned that already, strategy. But when you really boil it down, I mean, vision is really at the highest level strategy, because it's basically saying we're going to go in this direction at the expense of necessarily other directions.
Yes, yes.
So we're choosing, we're making choices. We're going to go this way and not that way. And, you know, I'm going to go back to my good buddy Peter Drucker. Mm-hmm. And again, I think he would love our show. You and I have talked about this. I think Peter would love our show. I imagine sometimes that he's here. It might be just an illusion, but I feel that he's here. But he would always say that, you know, the best way to predict the future is actually to create it.
Yes.
And this is what he was fantastic at, because he would also say things like, we're gonna play with the future that has already happened. Mm-hmm. Because he knows that, you know, we can't predict the future. We don't know with certitude what's going to happen next.
Right.
But there are things that if we're observant and we're thinking, if the sensory system in our organizations and ourselves is actually working, mm-hmm. we can actually see things before many do and start to synthesize that and make that part of our vision for the organization, for the company, for ourselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, and what's true about this now, though, is that direction is very connected, because we're in an interconnected world, to a lot of other environmental things that are happening around us. Or perhaps direction includes a lot of organizations or a lot of capabilities or a lot of relationships. And so we're going to talk about what I call the remix strategy, which is a great book, by the way, that outlines how the laws of this work. But it's really saying, okay, it's not today. Start to think in terms of my particular business competing against one other, four other, whatever other businesses, 20 other. It's different because now we're in ecosystems. So it's really bundles of organizations working together against bundles of organizations working against that. Or, by the way, that also goes on an individual level. Individual connected to teams of people against individuals connected to other teams of people is much more the context of competition. And so when I think about direction, it's more complex when I'm thinking in terms of the interconnected reality as we go forward.
Yeah, and I think of, honestly, myself right now in this stage of life professionally, because I'm living and breathing this, I'm not a formal employee at a firm. Right. I'm part of this 1099 community as a technically an independent contractor.
Yes.
But working to build this ecosystem with like-minded folks. And so we're looking to actually build our business with relationships and associations with folks like other lawyers, other service professionals, venture capital firms, et cetera.
Yes.
And, we're acting as a federation more so than a more corporate entity, if you will.
Yes.
But it's exactly the same. We're trying to build our ecosystem, and that's where we are competing at. So we're going in with, again, other lawyers and venture capital groups and things like that, and competing against others that, are like that. They're bringing their own, band of ecosystem partners to the party, and
yes,
that's how we compete now. So it's a completely different interconnected world, and it does, the nature of competition has really changed.
Yeah, it has. And we're going to get a little bit deeper into that. And especially we're going to look at a great book by Daniel Pink, which is being raved about, which really talks about a whole new mind. And we're going to unpack a little bit of kind of what that means here. But he's arguing that in an interconnected world, but more than that, in a world where a lot of the capabilities that the left side of the brain is good at doing, which have to do with, logic, analysis, systemic thinking, et cetera, a lot of those are being outsourced, or a lot of those are being computerized, et cetera. And so consequently, he's going to argue that the capabilities on the right side of the brain, which have to do with imagination and intuition and narrative, are now becoming more and more part of the competitive advantage of people and of companies as we live into this much more the left brain reality is being digitalized or automated, et cetera.
Right. And this is, and we'll put this in our show notes, but this is Daniel Pink's book, and it's called A Whole New Mind, Why Right-Brainers Will Rule the Future.
Yes.
So just a quick note to those that might have joined us, you're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. Visit us anytime and join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, or listen to our podcast and write us a review on iTunes. So, Dave, you teed up Daniel Pink's book, and we're going to talk about this quite a bit because this is some really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, before we go too deep into that, also just kind of talk about the topic at hand that Daniel's writing about. And one of the things that I see out there, and even sense to a degree myself, is that people are afraid of robots.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
Right? The thing that, or the topic that business and a lot of things around business and management are becoming automated, mm-hmm, and machines are doing it now and not humans. And mm-hmm, what does that mean for my job? And it just, it strikes a chord, and because people are like, hey, I'm doing this job, but I could actually see a computer doing it better. What does that mean for me? And so this is what Daniel's getting at in his book, but you see this in other literature too. Like, there's actually a fantastic read out there that's called The Future of the Professions. And the thesis of this book is that we're starting to live in a post-professional world.
Wow.
Where, for example, IBM's Watson can actually diagnose medical conditions better than a doctor can.
Wow.
What does that mean for the medical profession?
Mm-hmm.
TurboTax can prepare your taxes better than a CPA. We've known that for years. But, so what does that mean for the future of, accounting and professional services there? LegalZoom, right? If you want to set up an LLC for yourself, you can, pay LegalZoom $99 to do it, which back in the day you would have paid a lawyer $2,000-$3,000 for that. And so, where do we actually go with this, where now some of the explicit knowledge that knowledge workers in those fields used to have control over now are becoming more automated and available? What does that mean? We also have talked about meta skills,
mm-hmm,
Marty Neumeier's book, and mm-hmm, we'll put a link to that as well. But he basically has the same premise that I think Daniel Pink does, in that, as humans, we've kind of trained ourselves that we need to be more like robots, and that's what the industrial age gave us. right? We need to become more like machines.
Yep. Hands and feet.
Right. And what we're finding that is in knowledge work, we actually need to train ourselves to be better humans now, which is kind of ironic. But he lists these five meta skills, and he lists them as feeling, seeing, dreaming, making, and learning as some of these fundamental things that we as humans don't, you know, this is what we're inherently good at and uniquely equipped at. But we don't teach ourselves to do this anymore because we thought we needed to be a robot. So it's pretty crazy. But I mean, I think this is where Daniel's really starting to go in his book as well, talking about left brain, right brain, and you know, how the right brainers, if you will rule the world. It's because humans are uniquely capable. We just haven't taught ourselves to do it very well.
Absolutely. And mentioning all of those meta skills is very parallel to what Daniel Pink's going to emphasize. And we want to really help people understand these, because the capabilities that help anyone with vision or direction that he's talking about, all of which are tuning into the environment around the organization. One of them is called empathy. We're going to talk about what he means by empathy. Also, story. Narrative has always been a big deal, but he talks about how story is becoming more central. And the last one he calls symphony, in the sense of synergizing many things together that actually is good music as opposed to a chaotic mess. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about all of those things after the break. We're going to dive in a little bit deeper here. So let's go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Working with Purpose, a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business, and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'll get back to more in a moment. First, I want to remind you of the opportunity to dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics. You can join the conversation, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events and offerings, and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com. That's davidstarkcollective.com, or find them on Twitter, at Stark Collective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose, and will help you go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. They team up together to advise and consult with businesses, organizations, and ministries. Find out more by going to davidstarkcollective.com and opening either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now, let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. Please visit us anytime and join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, or listen to our podcast and write a review on iTunes. We love those reviews.
Yes.
We love those reviews. So if you like us, review us. If you don't, don't. All right, Dave. So we were talking about some good stuff before the break, and you teed up Daniel Pink's book and the three capabilities with empathy, story, and symphony.
Yep.
Let's start to go a little bit deeper.
Let's do. And how they really help us with direction in our lives and directions in our companies. The first one is empathy. What he means by that, empathy in today's context allows us to understand on the emotional level what the needs, desires, and concerns of people are we're trying to serve. And so it's that requires empathy, not just logic. Logic's part of it, but it really requires that we understand, if you will, walk in their shoes for a couple of miles, understand on a dynamic level, because it's changing, what's really going on with that audience. I've got a good friend who's fabulous at this. He's a very successful entrepreneur in the social space and in the internet space. Serial entrepreneur, but he describes himself as an emotional techie, meaning he can get with the engineers and make sure they're doing all the technical stuff right. But his competitive advantage, quote unquote, in organizations he has, is he can tap into, well, what's this mean for the person who's going to be using it, or what is it that they really need along the way. And of course, that's helped him create fabulous software platforms and other kinds of platforms that really help businesses succeed. And that's because of this whole idea of empathy here. And therefore, vision many times starts from this unique understanding of the audience. So when you're talking about direction, at least one of the biggest things is, you know, what's happening with them? A friend in the church circle says, so what's the burning platform they're dealing with, right? What is it that needs to be addressed or might help them if we do address it? Might even be visionary in the sense they may not see it yet. But that's usually where it starts. And many times it has an emotional ground inside of them because we know that a vast majority of purchasing decisions are made from the right side of the brain, even if people are logical. That's coming into what's happening. And so being able to tune into this is really important.
That's right. And really fundamental growth strategy does start with this. I mean, the empathy and putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And again, this is an overriding theme of our show, but you know, the producer-centric world that the industrial age was, you know, starting with the product, just isn't anymore. You know, we're too interconnected and there's too much... For all the right reasons, there's a lot of transparency now. And if you build a bad product, people know pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So starting with human needs is a great place and really the place to start. But, you know, when I think of some of the things I do with my clients as well, we talk about things like brand purpose, positioning, and overall brand strategy. Mm-hmm. And really that is an emotive thing. You know, that's not starting at a place where if you were to think about Maslow's hierarchy, you don't start at the bottom of that with features and benefits, though that is what most organizations naturally talk about. Here's this thing I created. This is what it does. And then if you're lucky, they say, and this is what it'll do for you. That it doesn't work any that well because as humans, we're equipped to seek meaning, right? And to seek something greater than ourselves. And so you have to talk at an emotional level. And that's what, if you think of the great brands that you love, right, like the Disneys and the Apples of the world and, you know, from Mercedes to Kashi to whatever, all of those brands don't just speak at features and benefits. You can get at features and benefits from them. But what they really are good at is telling you an emotive story and getting to the why piece of that. So brand strategy is all about that. So is customer experience. And kind of thinking through all the different facets of how we engage with businesses, not just the product itself, but, you know, when you call a call center and you talk to someone, what is that experience like? You know, when you have to make a return, how easy is it for you? All these things bubble up into customer experience. And this is where empathy really plays a strong role, where, you know, through tricks and tools like contextual inquiry, which is just a fancy way of saying, we're going to be in the middle of the service delivery and really observe what's happening. These are all the things that are really helping to create advantages for companies because they are starting with audiences' needs first.
It's interesting that the recent movie, The Intern, is really about how the major character tunes in as a stay-at-home mom and how in the world she's going to have products that relate to her. And, of course, this is about building this huge company. But the same thing is she starts from the place of empathizing with, because she was one, a stay-at-home mom that's trying to do this kind of shopping. Same kind of, you know, Hollywood's way of illustrating
that. That's right,
that.
Same thing.
A quick note to those who are listening to us. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please visit us and join us at the conversation on davidstarkcollective.com. You can find us on Twitter, at Stark Collective, or listen to our podcasts with write a review on iTunes. I want to go now into the second capability, beyond empathy, that Daniel Pink tunes into. And that's story, the capability of story. He means by this, he means that the narratives inside and outside the firm have helped form it over time. Why is this important to vision? Because Daniel Pink puts it well when he shares this insight. Stories have the capacity of capturing exactly those elements that formal decision-making methods leave out. So in other words, you've got all the logic, the reasons, even, you know, the forecasts, all the things that go with great that side. But where's the story in this? And the story, by the way, is what's going to carry you to the customer. It's going to allow people to understand it on the right brain side in addition to the left brain side of things. Because logic tends to strip things down, right, and move all the subjective emotions to the side. That's what logic's supposed to do and all the things that go along with that in planning. But stories capture context, right? Because everything has a context, captures emotions, information, knowledge. And then to encapsulate that in a story is what contextualizes it and makes it emotional for people, which is really, it's really vastly more important in what he calls the conceptual age. So he says we're not in the information age, we still are, but in one sense, but we've now moved to the conceptualization stage, which is really about much more all the things that go along with story. And of course, narrative has been powerful forever, right? And but that's especially kind of coming forward now. So what he's arguing, therefore, is that vision gives an organization needs to be grounded in stories, both internally and externally, and with the high moments of the organization. I'm working with one organization right now, and by far one of the biggest things that happens with these hallmark stories. Everybody has them, if you ask companies. They also have the opposite, which is the trash heap stories. But those also can be informative. But the high point stories really capture the essence of things. And it says so much more than only the facts and logic.
That's right. I mean, there's something fundamental about stories in humanity, right? And so our brains are wired this way to think about and process meaning through stories and information through stories. And there's one thing you and I have talked about in the past, but it's called the hero's journey. And this was something that the American mythology professor's name was Joseph Campbell. And many of our listeners are probably very familiar. Some it'll be new to you, but we'll put this in our show notes as well. But what he found is that if you look at humanity and you look at mythology and even many religions and even just like movies that you see, they follow this narrative arc that he called the hero's journey, which has different phases, but it starts with kind of boredom and a call to adventure, and then you get to, you know, a crisis, and then you get to, you know, even this resurrection moment, and then, you know, ultimately, you know, success or the end of the story. But it's this hero's journey. And C.S. Lewis, who we both love because he's a Christian apologist, but he was also a mythology writer, if it was, if you will, that was his genre. He talked about Christianity this way too, and saying, you know what, Christianity is really, he phrased it as the one true myth, in that it does follow kind of this narrative arc that we see is so fundamental to humanity, but it's grounded. It's the one that is actually grounded in history that shows this. So as Christians, we say, you know what, the hero's journey seems like something that is innately part of humanity, but it's because it's built on the narrative of God and of Jesus being the ultimate hero.
Absolutely.
And so it's fantastically interesting, but the power of story goes really, really deep. So non sequitur to that too. Again, we'll put the hero's journey stuff in our show notes if you're interested. We could do an entire podcast on that.
Yeah, we could.
But also the power of stories now, one of the most popular positions that people are hiring for now in organizations is actually around storytelling, and it's that of a data storyteller. So two words that you don't see together very often.
Yes.
But the importance of data is increasing like crazy, but people need to package this up in stories so they can see the meaning behind the numbers. And so that's a key position happening in the marketplace now.
Yeah, it's exactly right. But let's go to the third one just so we cover it here. That's the capability of symphony. I love this one because this is probably one of my sweet spots in terms of what I do. Pink means that symphony is a right brain activity, which essentially means the ability to synthesize many different inputs and guide the symphony of voices and inputs to see the big picture. Synthesis is the core natural talent I have. It's in my sermons, it's in my books, it's in everything that I do, right? And that's where this vision is about, giving the imagination a clear picture of the future by synthesizing these things and allowing you to see it. And we all know when we've had that experience where it comes together, wow, now I see it. It's like it goes through a complexity, and then it goes to a simplicity, but it's a simplicity that's been informed by all of what the complexity is, right? So that's what he's getting at here. And, of course, in an interconnected world that's got all of these things coming from the environment, symphony is very powerful for people. I think you may have one example of that.
Yeah, I mean, working with clients, I mean, synthesis is really important. I mean, we've brought one recently that needed to have solutions around online learning, and we actually mirrored that with video games to make something happen. So,
yes.
But one of those moments that's just a aha, wow, this is going to be powerful moment, and that comes from what Pink would describe as symphony.
Absolutely. Now, let me bring this back to the core spiritual side of this, and that is in Hebrews 11, speaking of the hero's journeys, all of the heroes of the faith, if you will, by faith Abraham, by faith Isaac, by faith Joseph, by faith David, what's happening is, and this is how the scripture puts it, they see what God is doing in the future. They see the kingdom, the vision of what God's doing. And it's, the text says they welcome it from afar. And because that now becomes, that direction coming from God, if you will, becomes the core of who they are. And then they feel like aliens and strangers. It's interesting, when you're a person who finds direction, it may not be appreciated at first by all those around you, because you've got something that you've tuned in from these things. But many times, great direction for individuals and great directions for companies come out of this empathy. They do. They come out of story, and they come out of the synthesizing of things to have a picture that's very similar, saying by faith, by welcoming it from afar, right? So anyway, we're glad you've tuned in today with us. We'd love to have your input, so please give us some feedback when you have a time. We're doing a series on questions in business and leadership, and this series will continue. Next week, we're going to look forward to talking about how will you win? How will you win as an individual, and how will you win as organizations? We're going to tackle that in an interconnected world. Thanks again for joining us. As a reminder, you can join us at davidstarkcollective.com. For Justin Royer, I'm David Stark. See you next week.